Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Del challenges the status quo, questions everything, and empowers you to return to your core beliefs to make your life better. If you're ready to hear the truth and get your roadmap to the lifestyle you really want, the next hour will change your life. And now, your host, self-made millionaire, national award-winning investor of the year, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today, my friends, I'm going to share with you some insight, some background history about myself and about how I got to where I am. And I'm doing it for this point of view, and that is that on almost every single day, I make some kind of a financial decision. As simple as going to dinner and spending $100 for dinner or $400 dinner. All the way down to making a giant purchase, all the way down to changing my investments in my portfolio, moving things around, you know. But as you make these decisions in life, they're based on something. And so for 30 years, I've been consulting people and doing radio shows and listening to people's stories and then trying to hash out with them what they should do. And looking at it from the point of view of, at sometimes early on, I was just like, but you are a complete idiot. How did you do that? To much, much more empathy as an elderly gentleman as I am today, where I'm saying like, man, that was a bad decision. That one didn't work out. Huh? You know, it wasn't a very effective way to approach that. So although my tenderness has gotten better, my belief systems haven't changed that much. I mean, I see things. Now, there are some things that have changed. And, you know, there's reasons why they get changed. Something comes along and says, you know what? I saw this 9 out of 10 times it worked this way, but the 10th time it worked this way, and boom, now I have a new understanding. And that does happen. And so today we're going to have some fun. We'll tell some stories. And some of them are minor in my life. Others are not. They're more important. So I'm going to go through and I'm going to start out with what I learned working for someone else is basically what this show is about. What kinds of things did I learn? Because I could do another whole show on entrepreneurial activities. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I was a magician. I had a business where I went around and collected garbage out of trash cans, then brought it back home and had garage sales. Believe it or not, you go, Del, that just can't happen. I go, man, I did it. It was very, very profitable. I guess I was like a junkyard, right? I just went around and picked the stuff out of people's trash cans. It was still perfectly good. Brought it to the house, cleaned it up if necessary, and sold it. So I had that. I had the magician shop. You know, I did the typical lemonade stands. I've been, you know, sold cookies. I did all the different things, right? Boy Scouts paper route, you know. So from early on, I was entrepreneurial. But when I got out of college and I headed to Houston from Wisconsin, I decided that I got to get a job, right? So I get here and end up in Houston. And even that was a calculated decision. The reason I ended up in Houston was because when I lived in Madison, Wisconsin, I said, okay, I'm going to find, and I looked up that year, the most profitable, fastest growing cities in the country. There were five of them. It was Dallas, Houston, believe it or not, Galveston. And then it was L.A. and San Francisco. I think it was San Diego, maybe. Not San Francisco. I'm not sure. But it was two California cities. So what I said was, okay, I'm going to swing down from Madison, Wisconsin, hit Dallas, check that out, go down to Houston, check that out, go down to Galveston, check that out, then go out to California, see where I got. Well, what happened was is that I was coming down, and when I hit Dallas, Dallas had the largest snowstorm it had ever had in their entire life. And the reason I left Madison was to get away from snow. I mean, I couldn't stand it anymore. That's why I had to get out of there. It was just ridiculous. Plus, it was a liberal bastion where there were really no jobs because of the way the liberals controlled and manipulated everything. So I couldn't stay in Dallas. It was freezing cold, so I didn't even stop. I just drove right through it and went down to Houston where there was no snow, but it was snowy on the way down there. And I got down there. It was cold, wet, and rainy, really ugly. And I go, man, this is really an ugly town. If you ever drive into Houston at night where there's not much lighting or whatever, and you just look at this industrialized city, and I came in down 59 South, which, you know, took me through past get down Dena and all of the industrial part of town, the east side of town, which was really ugly. And then I got onto 45 South because I just kept following the largest roads. I didn't know where what what was where it went. And I went on 45, went south, went all the way down to Galveston, got down to Galveston and almost puked. I mean, you realize that Galveston as a waterway is a cesspool, a sewage dump. And back then, they had had the oil spill, so there was all these oil globules floating on top of the water. Besides that, even when it's not floating, the water is almost poo-poo brown. The sand is terrible. Place is just disgusting. And I had come from Madison, Wisconsin, where in Wisconsin, it's a glacial state, glacial lakes everywhere, which means the water is crystal clear. You can look in the water, and it's so clean you could drink it, but you could look through it, it's so crystal clear you could see 100 feet down, see a dime. That's how clear the water is everywhere there. It's unbelievable. So I said, this is disgusting. So I got back in my car and said, I better go back to Houston. It's a bigger town than Galveston. I drove back to Houston. Ended up on Telephone Road, which, if anybody knows, it's where all the strippers, prostitutes, and drug dealers are at. I didn't know that. I just found the biggest street, pulled my van over and got into a flea bag motel and spent the night. And from that point on, I realized I didn't have enough money to go to California. And so I looked for a job, see if I could live in Houston. And the first job I got in Houston, I went to a job locator, an employment locator. And they said, what skills do you have? And I said, well, I've got 6 years of accounting. My dad's a CPA. I guess basically accounting is my background. And so they said, okay, we're going to find you a financial institutions job. But what they did was they got me a job working at a finance company. It's called Blazer Finance, I believe is what it was. And my job was like basically a clerk. And what I did was, it was $600 a month. I'll still remember today what I was paid, $600 a month. I worked 8 hours a day, the most boring 8 hours I've ever worked in my entire life. I used to watch the clock go click, 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 click. And it was just a terrible job. Now, what did I learn at this job? Well, I learned some pros and some cons. The first thing I learned from this job, which was absolutely one of the most important things that I ever learned in my entire life, was how to run credit and criminal checks on people before you lend them money. And the concept of there being good people and bad people. You know, you just don't understand that if you're a normal person. You think everybody's the same. I mean, you run up to Bob or Jill or Sue or Bill at the bar and you're talking to them. You have no idea that this person is a criminal, is a hacksaw murderer, has never paid their bills, has broken every contract they've ever signed. You have no idea. These people are just scum. But working here, that was my job. I did credit checks on people. I did housing checks. I did employment verification. So all of the things that a normal real estate investor slash mom and pop house owner, renter, would never learn to do, I learned to do it like 20 years of age or whatever it was when I got out of college. And that was invaluable for the rest of my life. To this day, it's invaluable to understand that concept. Now, what did I also learn that was bad? What I learned was, I can't sit in a chair all day long. It's just, it's impossible for me to do it. I did it. I forced myself to do it. But sitting there on the phone, calling people each day, and what I had to do was call people, and one of two things, get this is bizarre, I had two jobs. One was to call people that didn't have loans, who had had loans in the past, and say, hey, I see you paid your loan off. We'd like to give you an extra $1,000, $2,000. Maybe you need it for Christmas. Maybe you want to buy a motorcycle, whatever. Would you like to get a loan from us? Because we've got you down. And we would pre-qualify them for what we thought we could give them. So we've got you down for $1,200. If you want to come by and pick it up today, I got a check for you. All right? The other thing I did was collect money from people. So I was calling people constantly, all day long. Hi, how you doing? Yeah, this is Dell. You realize that you missed your payment? Oh, yeah, okay, well, can you get it in here today? No, I can't get it there till Friday. Okay, whatever, and I'd set appointments for them. After X number of times of them not showing, I had to go in a van. And we did loans. Our loans were based on, they call it sticks, which is furniture and fixtures and stuff. So I'd go to their house, knock on the door. They'd open the door. I'd put my foot in the door so they couldn't close it. And I would look through the door, and I would start writing down the stuff I saw. I said, okay, couch, TV, stereo. They go, what are you doing? I go, I'm writing down the stuff that we're going to take here when I come back with the guys to pull all this stuff out. And I just want to make sure that we got a big enough truck to take it all. And they go, what do you mean you're going to take it? I go, you know you read your contract, right? If you don't pay, we take your stuff. No, 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 you can't do that. And you'd be surprised how many people that said they had no money at all. Close that door, turn right around, come back out, and hand me some money, man. It was an amazing thing. What I learned was, and this is a positive thing, was people lie. They lie about everything. And they lie about paying. And they lie about how much money they have, either good or bad. We'll take a short break. Be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Del Walmsley on Designing a Lifestyle.
When I was younger, I decided that I was not going to live the life that the average person lived, which was to think I was going to work for the end of my life, save up enough money, and then when I'm old and gray like I am now, try to buy my life back with a pile of money that I had. I said, no, I'm going to design a life and I'm going to live that life. That's it. Period.
Are you ready to design your life? Learn how at Lifestyles Unlimited's live online free workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
When we left, I was talking about working in a finance company here in Houston called Blazer Finance. And the reason I didn't work there anymore is because the other thing I learned from Blazer was that the management training program means nothing. They promise that you work for $600 a month, but that you can go through this training program that can elevate you from one level of employee to the next, to eventually an assistant store manager, and then eventually a store manager. Well, they had like this 20 or 30 or 40 piece training program. It was on these VCRs, you know, the big plastic VCRs. And they said, and it was in the back room, like in the rec room or whatever, you know, lunch room, I guess you'd call it. And they said, you can check those out and you can take that course. And normally, the people weren't that interested in doing it, or maybe they'd try and they'd get tired of it. But I took that thing home. I had nothing to do. Now think about it. I'm a young kid, a bodybuilder, working and have no family, no friends, don't know anybody. So I just went home after I worked out and watched these videos and took the tests and passed all the tests, and in no time at all, within 6 months, I'd gone through what they considered a 5-year management training program. And I said, okay, I passed all the tests, how do I move up? The guy that I worked for was like 65, 70 years old. He's a good old boy, Texan, had been smoking his entire life to where his fingertips were literally orange. His teeth were orange. He had a big old giant smile, but it was orange as heck. And he was just a country bumpkin and just ridiculous. He looked at me and smiled and said, Boy, you can't graduate in 6 months. That's a 5-year program. It takes you time to learn this stuff. And I said, sir, I don't think that's the case, because literally I know everything that you know, and I can tell you who you're going to lend to and who you're not going to lend to, and I can tell you how to collect, and I do the collections. I pretty much understand everything this office does, and even more importantly, my background's accounting, so I understand the financing behind this business. I understand the money coming in and out of the office, and I understand this office and how it becomes profitable, what margins it has to have, and so forth. And the guy looked at me and goes, boy, I don't think this business is right for you, boy. I said, what do you mean? I said, I'm perfect at this. He goes, boy, you're just going to have to understand, ain't no way you're going to move up like that. This is a 5-year training program. You'd be lucky to get an office if you were. I've been working here for 35 years. And right then and there, I knew it. I saw something that I've never seen before, never realized about. But it's called the good old boy system. And there are positions you will never crack in a company, because it's a company that's run by good old boys, and the good old boys hire other good old boys, and they're all comfortable with each other, and you're never going to go anywhere. So I left, and I looked for something that was more lucrative, so I went out and I found a job as a truck driver, but I didn't know how to drive a truck. And so I took truck driver training, and the company I was going to work for, they let me borrow a truck to park it and to drive it around the parking lot and to learn to do a semi, right? And so the first time I went for my truck driver's license, I'd never parallel parked a semi. But you had to parallel park a semi, and I parallel parked that sucker and got my license. And so I thought I was going to drive a truck, but no, now you have to be an assistant. Here we go again. And so really what you are is they call you a helper. And a helper is a guy that goes with the truck. Now, let me tell you what I did. I worked for a company here in town that was a dairy company, trying to think of the name of it. Probably come to my mind. Oh, Shep's, I think it was. And what Shep's does is they deliver dairy products to Stop and Go's, some small grocery stores, different small businesses. And the way it worked was, it was supposedly the truck driver was the brains of the operation. He'd pull up in the back of the thing, open up the back, bang on the back door, open up the back door, and he would tell me to start loading up the dairy products onto the three-wheeler, or two-wheeler, I'm sorry. And then there was a big lift that lifted, because this truck was like 5 feet off the ground. We'd put it on the lift and bring it down. And while I was doing that, he'd go into their cooler and count what products there. And they had a product list. This is what we needed. We need to have 15 butters, 20 milks, 7 sour creams, whatever. And he would match that up with what was in there. And then he would come back to me and tell me, pull this for me. And so he would pull that, and we were supposed to take it into the dairy, right? And then he would go up front and get paid. And most of these guys paid cash because they were getting such low prices and they didn't pay sales tax that way. So they'd pay tax to the driver up front or pay cash to the driver up front. Some of them bought it on credit. Some of them did. But what would happen is that the driver literally would steal from them almost every single stop, unless he just happened. The guy was too smart and didn't let him do it. He would stand there with him and count it. The driver would walk into the place, say, okay, pick this stuff up. These dairy products are expired, even though they weren't. Put them in the back of the truck. Then he would count it with less products than what the guy really had. Go back up to the guy and say, you need this amount. Send me out to go get it. I'd bring their same products back in again. And I go, man, I can't live like this. I mean, literally, my brain was going, this is ridiculous. And I'm a young kid. I'm thinking, is this the way the real world really works? We're reselling them their own products. And so what would happen is the guy would get way more cash than what he had product on his truck. So at the end of the day, the guy was walking away with $2,000-$3,000 a day in stolen money, which is just ungodly. And I didn't like the job because you got up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, get there, load the truck, be driving all day long because you had to go during the day. You had to get the product to him during the day, then come home and then clean the truck out and everything. So I was exhausted. Heat, cold, heat, cold, heat, cold all day long. And I was exhausted. It was killing my bodybuilding. It was just destroying me. And I just couldn't do it anymore. But even above and beyond that, particular situation, I couldn't stand the fact that they were stealing. And, you know, as this went on, I saw more and more stuff they did. And eventually some of the stuff he'd do is he'd go out to his girlfriend's house and drive by his girlfriend's house and give her all kind of dairy products for free, drive out in the poor part of town and sell the dairy products out the back of the truck to people in the streets for very, very low prices to get rid of all the old dated product that he was stealing out of the refrigerators. And what's funny is that he was sending credit bills from the stores to the company that were more than what the product he was taking out of his truck. So he'd take his truck out with $20,000 worth of product and come back with $30,000 worth of bills, and the company was still billing the bills. So in my brain, and, you know, I can't testify specifically what they did, but in my brain, the company knew. Now, later on in life, and I had to quit. I couldn't stay. I couldn't do that. It was just, I couldn't take that. I don't know. You just can't live like that. And so I quit. And these guys, and it's really weird that I quit, because these guys were making thousands and thousands of dollars a day, right? So about 10 years later, I married my second wife, and her father and brother both work for that company. So it's a small world out there, man. And they told me, that's what we did. That's the way we made money on that situation. So what did I find out? What I found out was that there is a lot of scamming, a lot of ripping off, a lot of stealing, a lot of unscrupulous people and companies out there, and you don't want to work for them. Because if they'll do that to them, what will they do to you, right? And so, lo and behold, now that's 20, 30 years ago, so I have no idea what these guys do now, but back then, man, it was the wild, wild west. Literally, everybody wore cowboy boots and hats that delivered dairy products. We'll be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. Today I'm talking to you about, or sharing with you, what I've learned by working for other companies. And I've gone through two companies so far, a finance company and a delivery company, a dairy company. Okay. Now my third job after this, I said, look, after killing myself working heat and cold, heat and cold, heat and cold, long hours, getting up early, I said, you know what? It doesn't matter, because I got that job because they told me you could make $2,000 or $3,000 a week. So I went from a job that paid almost no money but was very secure and easy, and you sat inside the AC all day long, to a physically destructive job you could get paid tons of money to do. At that point, my brain says, no, I'm going to go somewhere in between. Bodybuilding is really what I'm all about. So I'm going to go find a job that I can do that will not hinder my bodybuilding. And so I looked around, didn't find anything. Finally, I ran into an ad for a health club instructor. And I thought, okay, let's go look at this. And went in, and it was Bally's Health Clubs here in Houston. And the job was to be, they said, instructor. But it wasn't like today's instructors where they're actually trainers. It was a gopher instructor. Basically, what we did was we cleaned the showers. There were maids, but we cleaned the pools, kept the chemicals up in the pools, picked up the trash throughout the place, vacuumed the carpets, cleaned the machines, and when new people started, we teach them how to use the machines, right? And I came to work at this place, and in no time at all, I could see that this was just the wild, wild west again. And the way the theory of the whole company was is that the salesmen are everything and everybody else is nothing. The product means nothing. It's just the salesman. If they can sell you a membership and tie you up in a contract for a 3-year membership that you can't get out of unless you ruin your credit, they were the kings. They were the smart people. So what happened was they put me to work in this big health club in Sharpstown, the main office. And everybody went to lunch one day and a guy comes in and he says, I'm looking to get in shape and whatever. And I'm a bodybuilder at the time. I'm in pretty good shape, right? So I said, let me walk you around, tour you around. Now, I'm not supposed to be touring. Although, I'm sorry, I would tour and then hand them off to the salespeople who would sell them, right? Or the manager. So I said, let me tour you around, talk to you about your fitness and so forth. So I talked to him and I brought him back in office. There's nobody there. And I said, you know, look, what do I need to join up? And I mean, okay, I can sign you up right now. He goes, how much is it? I says, $365. And normally the way it worked was people would put $30 down, pay $30 a month for, 3 years is how they paid for this stupid thing. And I pulled out the contract, and I knew contracts. I mean, left, right, inside and out, I knew contracts because I worked in the finance company. Had no fear of filling the contract out with this guy. So I pulled out the contract, and I said, but wouldn't you rather just pay that all at one time, paying cash? And the guy said, yeah, sure, I'll just write you a check for $300, whatever. And he wrote me the check, and I filled out the contract, paid in full, and had a new member. When the guys came back from lunch, I handed them the contract. I said, here, I signed this guy up while you're out. And they got furious. Because I had stepped on their territory. And then I had done something that they tried to act like they were the only ones that could do. And not only that, I didn't get them in a financing plan. I got them in a cash deal, which is much more profitable, I thought. To them, no, they want financing because they were making money off the financing plans, too. So whatever, they scolded me and blah, blah, blah. Well, that weekend, one of the guys that was working in the small health club over in the North Shepherd area, he was a bodybuilder also, and he was also a drug dealer and drug addict and child molester. You say, how do you know all that stuff? Like, you just find it out, man. He had two little kids living with him. I think they were like 16 and 17 years old, one little boy, one little girl, and he's a single, like, 40-year-old guy. Whatever. But in other words, they're not really screening these people working for him is the point I'm saying. And he had gone to a bodybuilding contest or had won on a cocaine binge, one of the two. I don't know what it was. But he didn't come back, and they said, we need somebody to run this health club. They sent me over that weekend to take care of the club while he went away for this trip, whatever. But he didn't come back. And during the weekend, they had a sales contest, and which means each club had a quota. Well, I had like this, like, I'd say 2,000 square foot club, a little teeny club, only had like, 10 people in it at a time kind of thing. So they gave me a quota selling one membership. Well, I think I sold two, and so I ended up winning the contest. I go, my God, who is this guy? You know, he's selling memberships before he even taught how to sell them. And he's winning contests, which also irritated and or pissed off all of the experienced guys that had been there for 10, 15, 20 years, right? And so that week, the guy didn't come back from the contest is what happened. He had gone on a binge, a cocaine binge or something, never came back. And so they gave me the club, said, you're the manager. I go, I've worked here like a week, and now I'm a manager of a club. He goes, yeah, go ahead, you can do it. It's no problem. I said, what's my quote? He says, your quote is 3 memberships a week. And it was really nothing to hit 3 memberships a week. You know, the problem was just getting anybody to walk in. You couldn't even see the place from the street. It was on an obscure street, and it was back off the street in an obscure spot behind a bunch of other buildings. But somehow I managed to do that and get ahead. So they moved me up and moved me up and moved me up, and eventually they wanted me to become a supervisor and train other people and give me a bunch of clubs to run and me train the managers to run the clubs. And I'd won sales contests and stuff. But the way they wanted to do it was that they actually paid the salesmen. We got paid pretty good because we got $2.75 an hour just like the instructors did. But we also got commissions. And what I learned from this for the first time in my life is commissions and salespeople are the highest paid people in the company. And that you have control of your income to some degree. But what I later found out was is that as soon as you get really good at one location, they'll take your location away and put you somewhere else where it's not doing very well because they know you can bring the success of that location up and give your location to someone who's not as good because they feel like, that location is already established. So then I found out about management of commission-based salespeople is really unfair, and it's really a ripoff. And eventually what they do is, if you're too good, they take away your territory. And if you're even better than that, then they try to get you to train. Well, they wanted me to become a supervisor. And as a supervisor, they were going to pay me $600 a week and no commissions. I go, dude, that's like a quadruple cut in pay. Yeah, but you'll be a supervisor. You go, that doesn't mean anything to me. I don't want to be a supervisor. I want to get paid. And they said, well, you know, what can we do? And so I renegotiated a deal with them where I got paid a commission based on the sales for all of my clubs put together. And I did pretty well at that. But then I came back to them. I said, do you realize that you're selling so much bad paper? The managers are just getting people to sign stuff they don't really intend to pay. And the company was doing very poorly. 50% of all the contracts they signed were going bad on them. And my contracts, only about 3 to 5% were going bad. They said, what in the heck are you doing? I said, I'm actually selling people memberships that they want, and I'm getting cash on most of the memberships, so they can't cancel them. They can't 3-day cancel on us. And so I said, okay, I want you to teach everybody else in the company, 400 health clubs nationwide, they wanted me to teach. And I said, nah, man, I'm not going to do that. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll do that under one circumstance. What's that? I said, you take profitability of this city, and whatever the profitability goes up by after I take over, I get 10% of that. Well, they reluctantly agreed to it because really they had nothing to lose. If there was no increase in sales, I got 10% of nothing and just my base pay of $600. We quadrupled the sales. And what happened was they got mad because I was now getting paid more than the vice president of the company. In fact, there's one vice president in each city that ran all the clubs in each city. I was getting paid more than any vice president because we were more profitable than anybody else anywhere. And this just irritated the bejeebers out of them. And they said, no, we can't do this. This can't happen, blah, blah, blah. And so they cut back the structure, the commission structure, the profitability structure, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And at that point, I realized, there's no way that any company is going to let you succeed within the company. Your goal is not to grow within a company. Your goal is to grow as a human being, as an individual. And I realized right then that I was making them, if they were making me, I was now making more money than I ever made in my life, probably about $100,000 a year. And the deal was, and normally I'd over there when I was really doing well, I was doing $60,000-$70,000 a year, but I had some really good years at this new pay plan. What I realized was is that not only was I making more money, $100,000 a year, $30,000 more, they were making millions and millions more because of what I was doing. And that was the first glimpse that I had into the fact that, what if I were doing this for myself? I've proven I have that ability to take these business situations, turn them around, and make the profits go up by millions. Shouldn't I maybe be doing that for myself? And that, my friends, was the beginning of the end of my employment history. We'll be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Del Walmsley talks about finding that one thing that made sense for the lifestyle.
I looked at franchises. I looked at multi-level marketing. I looked at everything in the world. But nothing made as much sense as buying one simple little rental property.
Real estate is your best option. Real estate makes sense. Lifestyles Unlimited will teach you how to buy your first rental property. Join our live online free workshop to find out more. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. So I'm taking you through the lessons I learned by working for other people. And we're at the point now where I'm working at the health club, and I've showed them how to completely change their industry to go from almost going broke to making massive amounts of profit by changing their plan of selling stuff on finance plans that people don't pay, to selling cash memberships to people, by being a little bit better about understanding health and fitness, that there's a way to sell as opposed to selling by just sham man type sales. And So the bottom line was that this went on, and there's you know, 12 years of work in there. There's 10,000 stories. It's not worth it. The point I want to get to now is I'm at the point where I'm really looking at this, and my next irritation is that the guy right above me, there's two guys right above me. One guy's the vice president of the area. The other guy is assistant vice president of the area. And the guy, the assistant vice president, was pretty smart, but the guy that was vice president of the area was really dumb as a rock. So he called me one time and told me, Dell, you know, the reason I say no to all your ideas is because I have no idea if they're smart or not, because I'm not smart enough to understand what you're saying. So if I say no long enough and you keep coming back to me, I figure it's got to be a pretty good idea if you fight me for it until I let you win. That was his way of managing me. And so I hated it. And the guy between me would steal all my ideas. I'd come up with another great idea. He'd take it to the guy. And he really liked the guy between us. So he'd listen to that guy. So that guy'd steal my ideas. And I said, you know, this is ridiculous. There's no way I'm going to get ahead this way. This is not the way to be successful. So I started looking for something else and found a guy that was a power lifter up in Dallas, Texas, owned a couple health clubs up in Dallas, owned a couple health clubs out in Jacksonville, Florida. I mean, he was a guy that goes to church every single day, was known as the big church giver and whatever. He was, you know, Mr. Christian guy. And he owned these health clubs in Dallas and he owned these health clubs out in Jacksonville, Florida. And he was a power lifter. And he hired me to go out there and run these health clubs in Jacksonville. And there were six of them. So I went out there and I got out there. And what I figured out was that every single club was run by a woman. Every single one of those women were cokeheads. Three or four of those women lived together in one condo, which was his condo that he paid for. And so, lo and behold, the story, you know, went that I went around, I said, look, you either got to straighten your stuff up or you got to go. Well, they didn't straighten their stuff up, so I got rid of them because they were just cokeheads. They couldn't stop themselves. I hired other people, trained them, and we tripled the sales. And I thought this guy was going to be happier than heck. So he flew down there one day and pulled me aside. He said, Dell, you got to stop what you're doing. He said, you're ruining my business. I said, what do you mean? I said, I tripled the profitability of your business. He goes, yeah, but you don't understand. Business is about people, too. I said, what people are you talking about? He goes, all those managers, all my girls. And I cannot tell you that he did anything with them. I will tell you the confines of it. Four of them lived in a condo. And every time he came to town, he stayed in the condo. They're all young, beautiful, in-shape women. And they bought presents for his kids that he could take back with him. And he would not let me fire them. Okay, you put two and two together, figure out whatever you want to figure out. But the bottom line was, it says, he brought it down to either they come back or you got to go. So I said, I got to go. Because I realized the next thing in my life. The next thing I realized in my life was that there's no way. I thought being in charge of the entire company would give me the power to do what I thought was right to do. And that just isn't the way it works. You still got the power to be at the top. That if you do something they don't like, then they crunch it down and stop you, even if you try to be profitable, even if you make their business more profitable for them. And, you know, I had profitability benefits tied into my owner or into my agreement, and I would have made a lot of money, but he just flat told me, no, I'm not going to pay and go away and get out of here. And so I left, went back to Houston, and they called me back and said, hey, why don't you come back to work for us? I said, there's no way. I was working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. That's what they worked. Everybody worked in health clubs. You had to cover your club. I said, I'm not going to do that. So we negotiated a deal after a couple months of negotiating that I would work only 4 days a week. And I'd work two weekend days, which were only 8 hours long instead of 12 hours long. So I was really working two 12s, which is 24, and then 16, which was 34, 40. I was working 40 hours. And, you know, I thought 40 hours was like a break. I thought, man, this is like vacation because I got 3 days a week off. It was like life was important. And right then and there, I realized that those 3 days were more important to me than anything in my life. Before that, when I worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, one day a week, all you had time to do was your laundry and go to the grocery store and sleep off the pain of working out and working so hard. No vacations. The guy wouldn't let us take vacations. Once, twice a year, we got to go for a week, but we only got to go on the very week they wanted to. And everybody went at the same time, so they just figured everybody that week would put their assistant in, and the clubs would all crash, and they'd have some kind of a super contest and try to get through it, and everybody had to go and come at the same time, which was impossible to do anything if you really wanted to do anything, because you had to go a certain specific week every year. So finally, I'm getting off 3 days a week, and you're talking about that is almost a whole week. It's a vacation because you get off, and I work 4 days. So I was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So what happens is Monday, you know, I'm off. Sunday, I'm off by 6 o'clock. And so it's like the day's mine still. You know, normally work until 10 o'clock at night. So the day's mine. And then I've got the whole Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then, I go back to work Thursday. I mean, man, this is like having a vacation every single week. And then I realized I came up with this concept. It's not the money, it's the lifestyle. And you know what happened? I made just as much money working 4 days a week as I made working 6 days a week. working 40 hours a week were compared to working 68 hours a week. And then I realized it. When you work 12 hours a day or you work five or six days a week, you don't work that entire time. You have to rest your mind. You are unproductive most of the time. But when you cut down the amount of time you actually do the job, you become more productive. Hence, at Lifestyles Unlimited, you will see that when my upper echelon people believe something to be true, I don't crush them down about it. And if they do something wrong, I don't crush them down about it. I don't get mad at anybody for anything. I just love them for working as hard as they do and being as good as they are. If they can't do the job, I find someone who can, but I don't hurt or dislike anybody and never give anybody crap. Secondly, nobody works more than 40 hours. If you work more than 40 hours for me, you get fired because I know you're not working. You're wasting time and you're burning yourself out and there's no quality of life. And if there's no quality of life, then there's no longevity of employment. So my friends, what I learned by working for other people is how not to be a boss and what not to do.
Thank you for listening to the Del Wamsley Radio Show, teaching you the opposite of everything you've been taught so you can obtain the results you've never obtained. Join us 7 days a week. Can't get enough? Visit DellOnTheRadio.com to listen to the Del Wamsley Radio Show, access past show podcasts, and join the conversation.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Wamsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Wamsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Wamsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Wamsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.